I used the guitar tech for Suicide Machines, and that work tour that summer in 96, we were on a bunch of those dates, and that was back like early work tour where they still had a contest.
Right.
So it was like, you know, I'd get all the gear set up for those guys to play and get everything broken down, and I'd just go skate all day and stuff. So, which was rad. I mean, you know, I mean, none of the props were all that good because they had to break them down and set them up every night, but it was fun to build a skate while on tour, you know?
Jeff, how's it going?
It's going all right, dude. It's good to see your face.
Yeah, good to see you too. Welcome to the Question the Answers podcast. I've got Jeff Dean here, who is a guitar player slash singer, also an engineer, studio engineer and mixer, who is in a number of bands, mostly from the Chicago scene. He's currently in the bands Heavy Seas, Her Head's on Fire, Dead Ending, All Eyes West, Airstream Futures, and Tight Night. So lots going on. You're also...
It sounds like I'm super busy, but I'm really not.
Well, I think anyone even... Go ahead.
I said, I guess I am a little bit.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, compared to a lot of people who were only in, like, say, one band, you know, I mean, that's a lot to have on your plate. But he's also an alumni of the bands The Bomb, Noise by Numbers, just to name a couple. I mean, I think you were saying earlier that, like, you think you've been in, like, about 16 bands or so.
There's been a lot over the years, for sure.
Yeah.
I have a list someplace. My wife, like, when we were first dancing, she's like, I need, like, a flow chart to keep track of this shit.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, actually. I know that there's like a website, I can't remember what it is, but there's a website somewhere that my friend Kevin pointed out to me that apparently has like this genealogy.
Band to band.
What is it?
It's called Band to Band.
Is that what it is? Okay, yeah.
I mean, I know that's what they do. It's like you can type in a band and then it pulls up the list of all their recordings and releases, and then it shows like how it's tied to other bands and musicians. It's like,
right,
like the six degrees away from Steve Albini, you know,
something right? Like that. Yeah. That, I mean, I thought it was fascinating, like going down that rabbit hole, because like you'll see that there's like members from one band who are somehow affiliated with like some band that you'd be like, dude, really? Like they're affiliated? Like no way, you know?
Yeah, that website's fun.
yeah. But yeah, man, it's great to have you on here, because I mean, shoot, you've got a lot going on right now musically. I mean, so Heavy Seas, I know, is working on putting something out here soon. And I know that you're going to be dropping some information about that hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Her Head's on Fire is also working on some new music, as well as Airstream Futures, right?
Yeah. All three of those things are wrapping up records. Well, actually, the Heavy Seas record's done. So we're getting all the things sorted for that.
Right.
But Her Head's on Fire, the album, the music's done being recorded. Joseph is kind of in the middle of getting all the vocals sorted. And then with the new Airstreams album, like we're in the middle of like finishing vocals right now. The music's been done. I think we've got four songs left of vocals to finish. And then that one's a wrap.
Cool.
Or, you know, so yeah.
Well, and Dead Ending recently, well, I wouldn't call it recently, but within the last year, put out a 7-inch, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, even in a pandemic, like last year was a pretty busy year. Like Airstream Futures released our second album in last February, and then Dead Ending released the new single on Alternative Tentacles. And then the studio project that I'm involved in with Jay Robbins and Darren Zentek called Moral Mazes, we put out a new 7-inch as well. And then All Eyes West did a digital single, and then Her Head's on Fire put out a digital single. It's like an acoustic thing, but with Gordon Withers playing cello on it. So yeah, I guess I put out a decent amount of music last year.
That's a lot, man. Yeah, I mean, for I think for any band or even one person to be involved with, you know.
I mean, if I'm being honest, it's like, dude, I mean, I wrote all the rest of these albums that I'm working on now through that whole thing. It's like I just dived into writing. That was my way of dealing. So it's like, fuck, man, I wrote like three albums on top of all that shit. I'm going to keep rolling with this because I'm sure the well's going to dry up soon. So, you know, while the ideas were hitting, I just was like, all right, let's churn them out, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, so Tsunami Bomb, we tried to stay as proactive as we possibly could. We ended up doing a couple of cover songs, and we're demoing for a new album. It's interesting for Tsunami Bomb because we all take part in the writing process. Like, so it's not just, you know, I mean, I'm sure that you've been in bands before where it's more of a collective effort, but, like for us, like each one of us kind of contributes song ideas. So, you know, we all kind of go through that process of like trying to filter it through everyone's kind of filter.
Yeah.
Before we start proceeding. But that, I mean, that's awesome that you were able to like really just churn out that much just by yourself, and like the rest of the folks in the band, like were able to kind of like just adopt that and say, yeah, like we're going to move forward with this, you know. That's,
yeah, I mean, you know, a couple of those things were like the Moral Mazes 7-inch, the music itself had been done for a while. It was just a matter of getting the vocals done. So that's a little bit easier. But with that Dead Ending 7-inch that came out, it was just one of those things. It was a reaction to what was going on politically, you know. And, you know, Vic Bondi and I were like, we need to write some new fucking songs, man. And so, you know, with that band, everyone lives in a different state. Like Vic lives in Seattle, Derek lives in Detroit, I live here, and Nate lives in Florida. And then it was like, can we even figure out how to do this? Because it's like, it's not even like we're in Chicago and trying to manage quarantine or in the pandemic. It was like, dude, none of us can even travel. So we were able to figure it out, and it ended up being rad, dude. I'm really happy with how those couple songs came together. I mean, it was a little unfortunate because Nate just couldn't swing being able to figure out the bass stuff. But then Joe Principe, who, you know, Rise Against, who was the original bass player in Dead Ending, he came back and played bass on this new stuff. And I mean, a little bit easier because Joe lives in Chicago still too. But I mean, we all had to do everything remotely. It's like, can you record at home? Can we put this together? Will it sound cohesive? And I think it came out really well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, to your point, with the fact that so many bands are having to record during this process, many of which did so in that same manner where they did it individually, like where they were at, especially for bands that were spread out, like say you guys or Tsunami Bomb. It's a little daunting because like there is that fear that it's not going to sound cohesive like you would when everyone's in one spot, which is, you know, usually a much more traditional way to do it. It's not a new thing where people have been recording remotely, but I think it's certainly becoming more of the norm. And I think that will continue even past the pandemic, you know?
Well, not to stay on topic with Dead Ending per se, but with that band, it's been very interesting because with the fact that everyone lives in other places like that, I mean, we haven't played very many shows over the years, but we've put out a shit ton of music. I mean, we have now it's like 3 EPs, 3 7-inches and an album, you know, for a hardcore band. That's a lot of fucking output. It's hella songs, you know? And the only way we were ever able to do that, it was like, okay, everyone's in town for like this day. So we have to get in, we have to, you know, rip that stuff out. And so there's always been like this really like, just energy to it. Like, cause it was like, can we fucking figure this out? Like we have a finite amount of hours here to make this work. And I mean, that's why those records sound the way they do, because it's like, you know, everything's recorded in the day and pretty much mixed in a day, you know? Right. So with this new stuff, it was like, is that same kind of energy and like chaos going to be in the recording? And I mean, everyone has been pretty pissed off. So, you know, there's a lot of energy to get out.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Dead Ending stuff for sure. And like the Airstream Futures record that you put out last year is fantastic.
Thanks, dude. That really means a lot.
Yeah.
I love that album. It's really unfortunate that we didn't get the tour on it. Like, our record release show for that album was the last show I played and the last show I ever went to. Mm-hmm. It's so odd. It was like a super fun night. Bob Nana opened and our friends Wet Tropics played too. It was just like this great night of friends and like hanging out. And it's, but it was just like, no one knew that that was going to be it. So it's really weird to look back on that, you know, and be like, huh, what a weird thing.
Yeah. It's an interesting phenomenon, like kind of thinking like, especially for folks like yourself who are so used to not only playing a lot of shows, but going to, I'm sure, a lot of shows. I mean, shoot, my last show was seeing Refused here in Berkeley.
Bad.
And it was a killer. I mean, as far as last shows go, if it was going to be my last show ever, like it was a good show to go out on. But because it was them, this band called Youth Code, and I think Mets opened.
Oh, dude, what a rad fucking show!
Yeah, it was killer. And yeah, it was great. It was, I got to walk home from it, which was nice, but it's seriously been over a year since I've been to a show, since I played a show. And I just like, I can't really fathom it. Cause before then, I think the longest I went between either seeing or playing a show was maybe like a month, maybe.
Yeah. It's a crazy feeling. It's going to be really interesting to see what all of this looks like on the backside of things. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, everything's getting close, you know, I mean, bigger bands have tours booked for even this summer, which is wild, you know, but it's just going to all be interesting, man. It's going to be real interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, so I wanted to ask you a little bit about like some of the newer, you know, projects that you've got coming up. So Heavy Seas, I know that we don't have like definitive information as to when that's coming out, but
I was going to ask you.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's coming out. And I mean, tell me a little bit about that project. I mean, where did it come from? And like, what kind of spawned this new band?
Oh, okay. So I would say, I mean, I guess I'm going to get a little bit personal here. 2019 was not, I mean, it started off as a very amazing year. It looked like it was going to be great and ended up getting really fucking shitty for me. Personally and musically, if I'm being honest, it was fucking, there's a lot of really tragic things. And I was just like starting to go into a pretty fucking dark place with a lot of stuff. And honestly, you know, music has always been the thing for me that's been there that fucking help me get through anything, you know? I mean, that's how it is for most people with, you know, music and stuff. So I just was like, all right, I need to channel all this stuff that I'm feeling into something positive. It's like, be a whole lot better to write some fucking songs instead of fucking drowned in a bottle, you know? And so I just started fucking working on songs with no really like intention for them, just fucking writing. And as things were coming together, I was like, cause I've never sang in a band before. I mean, I did backups in The Bomb and a little bit in Noise by Numbers, but like, I haven't been like pining behind the scenes waiting for my shot to fucking be the dude. You know, it's like, I've always been fine with just writing music and jumping around and being loud. You know, it's like, never wanted that role, you know? So as I was getting these songs together, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll just try and fucking do some vocals on this stuff. And then that way it's just something that's mine, you know? And it kind of started coming together a little bit. And then I was like, all right, well, I need to find a fucking band, see who wants to do this. And yeah, Ronnie, who plays drums, Ronnie and I was in The Rivals, and him and I play in All Eyes West together. And I knew like Ronnie was the guy for the way that these songs were coming together. Like I just, the style, like the way I was writing stuff, I'm like, okay, Ronnie needs to be the drummer for this band. And then I knew Katie was, who plays in Airstream Futures with me, was the right move too. And just knowing that it's like, I've spent time in a van with both these people, you know, everyone's super cool. We all get along. I knew that the two of them together would make a pretty awesome rhythm section. At least I hoped it would. And when we got together to start jamming on these songs, it just fucking clicked, man. And I mean, I'm thankful. I'm stoked that they wanted to come on this adventure with me. You know, it's like, no one was obligated. I was just like, hey, I got to do this other thing. I want to work on these songs. You guys want to play and record? And everyone's like, yeah, we're in. So that's really how that kind of came together.
Yeah, That's cool. I mean, so, you know, I've heard the songs, and I know that hopefully before too long, like, we'll start introducing them out into the world, but like, I wouldn't necessarily consider it like a vast departure from the other music that you're doing, but it's certainly not anywhere near like dead ending. You know, it's to me, it reminds me a little bit more of like a kind of a shoegazy kind of heavy indie kind of sound, like almost like a, like a Jawbox meets, like, I don't know, Shudder to Think kind of Joy, or not Joy, My Bloody Valentine-esque, like a little bit of like that, that shoegaze element to it.
I mean, I wanted to incorporate some of that stuff because, like, Swerve Driver is one of my favorite bands. So it's like, I wanted to kind of put some of those elements in there a little bit. And I mean, there's a lot of kind of bends and stuff like that in Always West already. Like, I was already incorporating a lot of that kind of guitar style, not the effects pedals, but just like that, you know, that swaying kind of motion. And so I definitely wanted to put a little bit of it in this, but, like, I mean, my whole thinking was, it's like, I want this to sound like Kerosene 454 meets like Oasis or something, whatever the fuck that looks like. So it needs to be very bombastic and heavy, but, like, have, like, it's kind of like, I don't know, like, melodic element over, like, all this craziness, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know, like, if that's how it turned out, but that was, like, the way I was thinking about it.
Yeah, no, that's killer. I mean, I certainly have a deep appreciation for that kind of sound, like, you know, as a 90s kid as well, like, you know, listening to, I mean, shoot, like, Smashing Pumpkins is like my bread and butter. And, like, you listen to, like, early Smashing Pumpkins, and it's just, like, laden with huge, huge guitar sounds and, like, huge sounding drums and, like, layers and layers and layers of just all that lush kind of wonderfulness, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like Alan Moulder makes, at least he makes, as far as I remember, he makes Siamese Dream, and it's like, I mean, Alan Moulder did fucking, you know, Loveless. He did fucking Swerve Driver, Mescalhead. Fucking just go down the list of all those kind of bands. He was the guy, you know? Right. So it makes sense that there was those kind of elements within that band's sound on those albums, for sure.
Right. And so what about Her Head's on Fire? Like, tell me a little bit about, like, what that band's got going on.
So, you know, I mean, not to dwell on 2019 being fucking miserable, but I mean, that kind of came out of, like, that same time period for me. Joseph Brillo, who's the singer in the band, he was in Garrison and I Hate Her Freedom and a bunch of other bands. And the guys in I Hate Her Freedom, those are, like, some of my favorite people. And I just love that band to death. And that was always, like, All Eyes West, like, tour guys. Like, anytime we played on the East Coast, we always played with those dudes. So we've shared, like, tons of chaos and adventure over the years. And actually, Tucker from Thursday was the drummer in I Hate Her Freedom. And when we were out of a drummer for Always West for a little bit, but between when John Drew was playing drums for us and Ronnie stepped in, Tucker actually came in on drums to play for us and recorded our second album with us and stuff. So it's like, I got a lot of history tied with that crew of people. And so Joseph had approached me and was like, hey, you know, I think I want to do some stuff. You up for, like, playing and recording? I was like, yeah, okay. So I just kind of started writing songs for that too, you know? And yeah, it all started kind of coming together. And it's just funny how music works out this way. I ended up going out to New York. It was probably September or end of August, September of 2019. To visit a good friend of mine, this guy Scott, and just get away from here and just kind of have a couple days to just fucking vent and hang out with my friend. And so Joseph and I met up and we were like talking. He was like, yeah, let's really do this. I want to make it happen. And my friend Jeff ended up meeting up with us just to hang out, and Jeff was in Small Brown Bike and, like, every other fucking band you can think of. He's like, we always make this joke, it's like, you and I have been in, like, the same amount of bands, you know, because it's like we're always playing with different people. And Jeff met up with us and he was like, I just, you know, I don't know how we haven't ended up in a band yet together, dude. I'm like, well, it's funny that you say that, because Joseph and I are going to do this thing. He's like, I'm the drummer. And it just happened like that. So, and then Rodrigo, who's playing bass, Rodrigo's old friend from Detroit of mine, and he plays in Saves the Day. And he's like, helped, like, produce, like, the Airstream albums and stuff. And I was like, you want to play bass? He's like, yep. And I just kind of like the dynamic of like two guys in New York, two guys in Chicago. It's like equally invested in it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's, it was like by the end of 2019, things really were starting to feel a lot better. You know, it's like Heavy Seas went out to Baltimore to start tracking our album with Jay Robbins. And then I was flying to New York like every couple weeks for band practice with those guys. And everything was feeling good. And then pandemic just put it all on fucking hold, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard not to take that. You got to remember that the pandemic isn't personal. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which it's hard to remind yourself that sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, and it's affected people in different ways, like depending on like what you do for a living and whatnot. I mean, like, so, and this actually leads me to my next question for you. So as somebody whose, you know, main job is to like do mixing and recording, you know, like that's something that could have easily effectively just squashed your career, you know? Depending on when it happened, because like years and years ago, if this would have happened prior to like the advent of like the internet where we can send files like digitally, like there's a pretty good chance that you probably would have just been out of work like forever.
Oh yeah.
Because like with no income, the people actually coming in, you know?
Yeah. But it would have been a disaster. I mean, it still was, you know, a really hard year,
right?
But I did end up having like some fun things come through, you know, like, and it's just like you said, like I mixed a record for this band. I like Ali from Italy. And it was like, we were able to do that because they could send me their session through the internet and I could just mix it and email it back, you know? So yeah. there was some fun projects like that that came through, and thankfully, you know, I mean, money's always tight. So it could have been a lot worse. That's why I always tell myself, it's like things have sucked, but they could always be a lot worse, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, with respect to you having the ability to do that remotely now, so besides this band from Italy, I mean, what other projects like did you work on? Or I don't know if you can talk about it or not, but
I mean, yeah, you know, I can talk about it. I'm trying to think of like, there was a bunch of weird, like random, like mixing things that came through. Like some dude like hit me up, like he heard like a record I did for this band, the Addisons, and he like played like with one of the dudes from like Jesus Jones or some shit.
Really?
Like really like random out of nowhere. And he's like, yeah, I really like that Addison. I'm like, fuck, do you know the Addisons? I'm like, they're just some like local pop punk band, you know? And then so like I ended up mixing a couple songs for this guy. I don't know what he did with them, but it was like just weird random stuff like that. And then towards like the fall of last year, like then I kind of started doing some stuff at the studio, like in person, like obviously very responsible. It was like, you know, masks on all the fucking time, like distanced, you know, better get a fucking COVID test before we do the session kind of stuff. And I ended up doing, I did a record for my friend Dave from this band Textbook. I don't know what he's doing with the band, but we did a whole album and it's a really great album. It sounds like almost like, I told him it reminds me of Firehose, you know, like he's like, I feel like it sounds like the Replacements. I'm like, well, both of those are awesome. So win-win, you know?
You win.
And then I ended up recording a new record for the Bullweevils too, which was a ton of fun.
Hell
so
yeah.
I don't know what they ended up going with someone else to mix it. So I don't know what's going on with it, but I had some things happen. It was nice, you know, that's more than I thought was going to happen.
That's awesome, man. That's cool that you mentioned the Bullweevils. It's so funny. Like, so I was in a band years and years and years ago. It was like a ska punk band in Northern California. And we played a show one time with the Bullweevils at this tiny little pizza place in Modesto, California. And like, nobody knew who they were. Like you know, we just knew that they were from the Midwest. Like they were from Chicago. Yeah. And they were on tour. And I'm trying to remember what label they were on, but I remember they were on.
They're on Dr. Strange.
It might've been Dr. Yeah. Strange, but I remember they were great. And then, you know, years and years and years later, like finally being like, oh yeah. Oh, it's that band. And like, I remember it's like, oh yeah, those guys were awesome. And like, Like I was really surprised actually to know that they're still a band and that they're still doing things all these years.
I mean, they took a break for a long time, and then they kind of came back to play Riot Fest one year, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. Pete Mittler, who played in The Bomb with me, is actually their bass player.
Oh, okay.
Now, so it's like, you know, so Chicago's incestuous like that, you know.
Well, yeah, you were telling me that like a lot of the bands that you've been in have kind of bled into a ton of, I mean, I think that just happens everywhere, but from what you were saying, like, it sounds like it's a pretty common thing over there. Yeah.
We did this tour this one time, and it was just because we all thought it would be funny. We called it the No Dudes Left Behind tour. And it was The Bomb, The Methadones, and Noise by Numbers. And so, you know, me and Susie and Pete and Pizzotti are in The Bomb. Pete and Susie and Dan are in The Methadones. Then Dan and I were in Noise by Numbers together. So we did this tour where it was basically like eight dudes between three bands.
Yeah.
That's it funny. Was awesome. But it was just like, yeah, like, okay, we keep playing with the same people.
Yeah, I mean, I remember years ago, I was playing in two bands at the same time, and like we did a handful of shows where we played on the same show, and I think honestly it was just because like I was helping to do like a lot of the booking, so I was just like, well, if I'm gonna book this band, I may as well book this band, and it just like thankfully worked out. So yeah. I just, like playing two sets in the same night, and it was fine. I mean, it really was. I mean, I was. Like I think 2021 at the time, so I actually had energy to do it, but yeah, I don't know if that would really necessarily be great to do often nowadays.
It was just that tour was a funny thing to do just because we could do it, you know what I mean? It was like, let's just do it.
It's, yeah,
it's like it was, wow, that one was chaos.
Yeah,
there's a night that we played at the Triple Rock that just got loose.
Well, I mean,
everyone in those bands likes to drink a lot. Let's just put it that way.
Well, I mean, when NoFX writes a song about your bar, then there must be something to that place.
Oh, that place, dude, Triple Rock was awesome. I miss that place. It was fucking great.
Nice. But yeah, you know, as a person who does like mixing and recording, obviously you're kind of a gearhead. I was curious, like, so what is your kind of rig of choice when you're playing live? Like I think you've
mentioned my guitar amp.
Yeah. Like I think you've mentioned that it depends on the band you're in, but, I'd just be curious to know, like, what's your favorite setup when you're playing live?
Well, in All Eyes West, I have a blue 62 Jazzmaster that I play in that band, because going back to what we were talking about, that shoegazy kind of element, you need that tremolo system on a Jazzmaster to get those kind of bends, those slowdowns. Everything else is a Les Paul. Mm-hmm. So it's like currently I've got a gold top with a gold top Les Paul with P90s. And then I'm running two half stacks because I'm a fucking asshole. And I have a 70s high watt cabinet with a Big Crunch amp. I don't know if you're familiar with that company. Brooks, the guitar player in Warren Women, it's his amplifier company. And I've had him build me basically this kind of high watt clone that's got a little bit more of a gain stage than an original one. And then I've got a 70s Marshall cabinet with this Rolla amp that's a JTM 45 clone, basically. That's pretty rad. So the two of them together with that gold top, that's going to be my rig until I'm done. I finally settled.
No, I mean, that's killer. Cause I mean, I know that I had mentioned to you offline before that I thought that your guitar tone was freaking awesome, you know?
And, oh, thanks, dude. That means a lot.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm constantly like trying to, you know, find the right tone for whatever band I'm in. Right. And with Tsunami Bomb, I think I have it. Like, so I run like, you know, my amp right now is I have a Mesa, a mini rectifier. It's like 25 watt. You know, and I just run it through like a 212, pretty standard. And it's with Tsunami Bomb, it's kind of interesting because a lot of the gigs that we play, like, you know, we fly to, and so I can't bring my gear with me, you know? So I'm often like at the mercy of whatever amp is available to me, you know? And oftentimes it's like a standard Marshall or like an Orange Head or something like that, or sometimes a Mesa. I think Mesa would be my preference. Like I kind of like that you know, scoop mid kind of Mesa rectifier tone. But like I play an SG mostly, like a
awesome.
SG standard. You know, I love how like they're kind of they can give you a little bit of crunch, and but they give a lot of cut though. You know, like,
yeah,
SGs cut through really well. And like as the one guitar player in the band, I think that really helps. You know,
I love SGs. I think they're the coolest looking guitars, man. They don't sit right on me for some reason. Like when I play them, like I wish I could play one. They're fucking cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like a Les Paul. So
yeah. See, for me, like Les Pauls, I love them, and they feel good when I'm playing.
They're heavy as shit.
So heavy, dude.
Yeah.
I can't do it. Yeah.
I have a 74 custom and two, and that thing's like 10 fucking pounds, man. Yeah. It is a boat anchor, but it sounds rad.
Yeah. No, I mean, Les Paul is really, you can't beat in terms of tone, man. Like they sound great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I like, I have a Jazzmaster as well, but it's not a standard Jazzmaster. It's like a newer model that has like the two humbuckers. And actually the humbuckers that I have are like a little upgraded
from
the standard. So I have one that's like a high output at the bridge.
Nice.
And then one that's like more of like a jazz humbucker at the the neck, so I can kind of switch between the two, which is great. But I don't know. I mean, I have several guitars, so I'm, you know, gear nerd too. But yeah, man. You know, so I know that you're big into the skateboarding scene. To kind of shift gears here, I noticed you have all those decks. How long have you been skateboarding?
30 something years. 35 years, I believe. 35. Yeah. Fuck, a long ass time.
Yeah, and you still skate. Yeah.
I do. Not the way that I used to, but I still try to go a couple times a week.
Sure.
Yeah, that was like my life for a really long time, you know. And I mean, at one point I thought it was gonna be my job. And then I really got into playing guitar. I was late to picking up a guitar. I didn't start playing guitar until I was 19.
Mm.
Like really late to it, but I picked it up quick. And I just was so in love with playing guitar. And then at that point in time, just like the politics of skateboarding and that like early to mid 90s was just getting stupid to me. And so I kind of stopped going down that path. I never stopped skating, but like as far as like competition, sponsorships, all that crap, like I just checked out of it and just focused on playing in bands and trying to get good at guitar. And ironically, it was my friend Kyle and I were talking about this the other day. It was like when I took that element of skateboarding out of my life, I feel like I'd started doing some of my best skating after the sponsor competition days.
Huh. Yeah. Like
I think it was like, all right, well, now it's just like, we're only doing this because we fucking love it. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. I was curious about that because, you know, like I tried skateboarding when I was younger and I could never really get the hang of it. Like I can ride around and stuff, but like, I was never like coordinated enough to like really get into like the moves and like everything. And maybe it's just for a lack of patience and like not wanting to like, you know, I don't know, hurt myself or something like that. But
yeah, I get that.
But you know, I'm always fascinated by, cause I love watching it. I love watching people skateboard. And like, so were you sponsored like back in the day?
Yeah. By a few different companies over the years. So
yeah,
I skated for Venture Trucks for a little bit. I skated for Time Skateboards and then from Time Skateboards, like everyone that skated for Times was sponsored by Dogtown Wheels for a little bit. And then I skated for New School Skateboards for a little bit. And then just some other shit here and there, like, and then I just started playing guitar and was like, fuck this. I want to play in bands.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that... some of my best friends are still professionals, you know, they're fucking killing it. But I just, music ended up being what I think what I was supposed to do, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I wouldn't change it. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, if I never start playing in bands, it's like, I don't even know, like, I wouldn't have, like, my life would be, I don't even know what it would even look like. I wouldn't know anybody that I know if it wasn't for music, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever get really concerned about the possibility of like really hurting yourself though? Like,
oh, yeah.
And how like, that would affect your guitar playing and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's constantly stresses me out. And that's like this weird, like battle I have with myself, because if I'm going out to skate, I want to skate for real. You know what I mean? Like, I want to go for it. I want to fucking hit it hard. But then I'm constantly in the back of my mind that if I fuck up my wrist and can't play guitar, I'm really screwed. And then there's also people that are counting on me that would be really upset. So then it's like, you start getting weird on a skateboard then. And it's like, if you have doubt or fear, you're going to get hurt.
Right.
And so like, that's, it's always like, I'm trying to learn to enjoy just the act of fucking riding a skateboard instead of having to be like the dude that shows up that throws down, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is a really hard thing to fucking to let go of, you know what I mean? I'm like, it's cool. I still like riding a skateboard, so it's fine if I go to the park and just cruise. Like, I don't have to do all this shit, you know?
Yeah.
It was funny. One little thing. It was funny. There's this skate park, Wilson, that's on the lake here, this cement park. It was so funny. I went there this one day, and I was skating in the pool, and I fucking slammed pretty hard in the pool. And I just kind of lay there for a second. I'm like, fuck, man, this hurts so bad these days. And these dudes came over, they're like, hey, mister, are you okay? And I'm like, mister? I'm like, fuck, I'm old. Not even like, dude, are you all right? It's like, hey, mister, are you okay? Yeah. I'm like, fuck, man.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, it was rough. I was like, all right. Maybe I need to bleach my hair or something.
Well, but I mean, you know, there's plenty of people, you know, well into like their 50s. And I mean, shoot, I don't know about like 60s and 70s or anything like that.
I mean, dude, Caballero's still fucking killing it, dude. Totally. So and it's like, I mean, as long as you can do it, I think you can do it. You know what I mean? It's just for me, like, I have to start being more conscious of like hurting myself, which sucks. You know, starting to play in bands and tour and like playing shows, like when I you know, first got into being in a band, when I first started playing guitar, it's like, I've always kind of just jumped around and moved around a lot on stage. It's like that energy from skateboarding just kind of transferred into playing shows. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's funny. I always do a little thing, and I always kept waiting to see if anybody would ever pick up on it, but there's no reason why anybody would, unless you're a complete dork like I am. But I always hold my guitar up when I'm done playing after a show. I always like go like that. And it's my little nod to Tommy Guerrero, because if you've ever seen any contest footage of any contest that Guerrero was ever in, after he finishes his run, he always holds his board up like that. Like, yep, I just killed it. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm always like, every time I'm done playing, I hold my guitar up, because that's my little skateboarding nod to myself.
Yeah.
No one's ever fucking picked up on it. But well, now I just told everybody. So
yeah. Did you ever skate at like the Warped Tour or anything like that?
I did on a couple of those dates. I used to guitar tech for Suicide Machines, and that Warped Tour that summer in 96, we were on a bunch of those dates, and that was back like early Warped Tour where they still had a contest.
Right.
So it was like, you know, I'd get all the gear set up for those guys to play and get everything broken down, and I'd just go skate all day and stuff. So which was rad. I mean, you know, I mean, the props were all that good because they had to break them down and set them up every night, but it was fun to build a skate while on tour, you know?
Yeah, that's tight. I mean, the marriage between the skate culture and the punk culture and even like the hip hop culture, and like the metal culture to a degree too. Like that's always been like pretty intertwined, you know? And
well, I mean, it's like, you know, when we were younger, it's like, okay, we're listening to Metallica. We're listening to fucking Black Flag or Husker Du. We're listening to fucking Eric B. and Rakim or fucking Public Enemy.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? It was like, it was all the same wheelhouse as far as like growing up skating, you know, it was all part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's one of the great kind of aspects about that world is that it's not necessarily only a youth driven like culture or movement, but it certainly like adopts a lot of like the same kind of mentality of a lot of those, you know,
You have to also remember, man, like 30 years ago with all that stuff, I mean, 30 plus years ago, skateboarding, hip hop, metal, and punk were all outsider music and outsider culture still. Yep. So it was like, it wasn't like this mainstream fucking thing. Like, you know, you had to find that shit.
Right. Yeah. And like, I think that that's like what makes it so special, you know, for a lot of people, especially especially folks who are a little bit older, who were there, you know, at the early stages of it and like really kind of helping to create it and make it become what it ultimately became. And like, you know, I'd be curious to talk to you more offline about like some of your reasons for kind of shifting away from like the way, like you mentioned that skateboarding was headed. We don't have a lot of time right now, but
I can give you one instance, the one thing that happened that I decided I was done.
Sure.
There was a contest. I feel like it was like an NSA contest that me and a bunch of the other dudes that I skated with went to in Southern California. It was like Moreno Valley or something. I don't know, the skate park. And I feel so bad because if the dude knew that this was the reason, he would probably feel really bummed. But this guy, Miracle Magnum, that we all knew that skated then, I think he ended up skating for Planet Earth like the same time my friend Kenny skated for him. Anyways, this was like right when big pants were starting to come in and be cool. And so I'm at this contest and I'm just wearing like a normal pair of Levi's, which weren't fucking tight. You know, they're just normal jeans. And I remember Mirko came up to me. He's like, dude, you gonna skate in those jeans? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, they're super tight, man. I don't know. And I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm done. I'm like, if this is what it's coming about, it comes down to not fucking skill sets, but like who's got bigger pants. I mean, it's such a silly thing. And I guarantee you, if Mirko knew that was the reason why I checked out skating, he'd probably feel horrible about it. But that was like the defining moment. I was like, I'd already started playing guitar and I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm out.
Well, yeah, dude, like fashion over
function. I was also a kid and fucking angry all the time. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like the whole thing of how like fashion dictate, I mean, that bleeds into like the music world too. You know, it's like, you know, like people like, oh, you got to look a certain way, or you got to market yourself a certain way in order to like really attain like the next level. And no matter how good you are, it won't matter unless you look a certain way. And it's frustrating.
Yeah, I don't play that, you know? Shit, man. I just wear band t-shirts still, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of my standard uniform too. It's just band t-shirt, pair of jeans, good to go.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Yeah, that's all awesome, dude. And I'm stoked to kind of find out about all the stuff that you've been working on and how you've been kind of dealing with the pandemic. Wanted to move on to the last couple of questions that I have for you.
Absolutely.
So, you know, something that I try to get from everyone that I have on the show is, who are some bands or artists that you think should be on people's radar right now?
Well, like newer bands?
It can be older or newer, just like bands that you think are really worth people's attention right now.
There's two bands that I really like now. And I joke all the time because I feel like every time I discover a new band that they're already been out for like 2 years, I'm like, dude, this new record's awesome. Oh, it came out 2 years ago. that's where I'm at. But there's this band called Big Bite that I really, really love a lot. They put out, I think it was in 2019, they put out this record Trinity. That's just fucking awesome, man. And then there's another band called Avlov that I like a lot too, that kind of, for their first album really has a heavy Dinosaur Jr. thing going on, which I fucking love. I mean, Dinosaur Jr. is the reason I basically got into punk anyways. And then they have their second record that came out a few years ago is really fucking great too. Like I love both those bands a lot.
Sweet. Yeah. I'll have to check those two bands out. Any bands specifically like from the Chicago scene that you think are worth noting right now?
I mean, there's always cool bands playing around here. I mean, I'm a little out of it, I guess, you know, I mean, I really just focus on my own shit, but then, you know, I mean, the bands that I've gotten that I've worked with around here, I like a lot. Like Typesetter is a rad band. I recorded both their albums. You know, Bob Nana's always fucking working on something. That's awesome. I mix a record for my friends, Wet Tropics, who's John from Boys Life. It's his new band. They're really rad. There's a band called Bow and Spear that Megan, the old bass player in Airstream Future, is was played bass in that band originally. I don't think she does anymore, but those guys are really cool. I don't know.
Sweet. No, that's great. I mean, that's great. List that I can throw. I'll throw links for all those bands so people can check them out. But thank you for that. And then, you know, the last question I have for you, and I'm very eager to hear what you have to say. If you only had 5 records to listen to for the rest of your life on a desert island, what would they be?
Dude, so you told me you're going to ask me this question, and I'm like, how do you even answer this question? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the criteria, right? Like, I mean, there are records that are definitive in who I am, you know, like Dinosaur Jr. Bug, Metal Circus, Husker Du, fucking Pegboy Strong Reaction. And it's like records that are like fundamental to me, but like, I don't listen to them all the time anymore.
Right.
You know, I probably should, but I just don't. So it's like, do I think about the records that I listen to all the time? Are those the top 5? Like the ones that I listen to on a regular, consistent basis?
Well, I mean, if I had to, I guess, I mean, really, I leave it up to the person answering the question to just kind of give me 5 records that they think that they could listen to for the rest of their lives and be content with.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think that it has to be a record that was like the record that got you into X, you know, style of music or like whatever. Okay. Like, as far as I'm concerned, it's just 5 records that you think that you would never get tired of listening to, because you only have those for the rest of your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. I know at least I can think of 3 at least right now that I can say. Amusement Park's On Fire, Out of the Angeles, hands down. And I hope we have a little bit of time to talk about this.
Yeah.
This is what that record defines to me, what I love about music. And it comes from being like a record that it's just sonic fucking landscape, man. It's one of those albums that you listen front to back. You don't skip because it's just got so many layers and textures, and it fucking rocks. It's Mike's fucking awesome. And so that band, and this is what's so rad about music. My friend Justin Schwier that lives out here does that record label, Underground Communique. He went to Reckless Records one day, and he's like, and then he calls me. He's like, "You heard this band, Amusement Park's On Fire?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "I was in Reckless, and someone was playing the album. It's awesome. I think you'd like it. It's like Swerve Driver, but more punk." I'm like, "All right." So I just went down to Reckless and bought the fucking album. And I was like, "This album's great." You know, and so then I'm like, "Huh, Filter Records. I wonder what that is." And I'm looking it up. And I started talking to the guy, Alan, like the band I was in, 4-Star Alarm at the time. I was trying to find someone to put out our album. I'm like, we just randomly emailed this guy. And he was like super receptive. I mean, obviously we didn't work together. He's like, "Hey man, yeah, like the record, you know, it's awesome. You like Amusement Parks too." Fast forward, Alan was Sergi from Sam I Am's college roommate. And so I'm talking to Sergi about Amusement Parks on Fire. He's like, "Yeah, you know, Alan put that record out." I'm like, "I was emailing that guy." He's like, "Yeah, it's my college roommate. Super cool." And so then like I ended up being friends with Alan, and Amusement Parks on Fire is coming to town to play, and I couldn't get tickets to the show. And I'm like, "Hey, can you get me tickets to this show? Can you get me in?" He's like, "Yeah, no problem." Because it was like a weird, they were on tour with like the Psychedelic Furs and Happy Mondays, which is awesome, but really odd pairing, you know? So I go to the show. I end up talking to Mike after the show. I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I know Alan." He's like, "That's amazing, blah, blah. You got to come to Milwaukee with us." I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Are you getting me in?" He's like, "Yeah, I'll see you there." And so I drove to Milwaukee the next day, ended up hanging out with those dudes like all fucking night, crashed in their hotel. That I just met these guys the day before. And then every time those guys would come through, we'd hang out and kick it all the time. And Mike and those guys are like some of like my closest friends now, just from Justin finding that record. They ended up like taking it all as West on our first European tour with them. That's like awesome. Just wild ass shit. And I mean, Mike was just texting me as we're doing this thing. I saw it popping up on my phone. How awesome is music? Like these dudes in England, I ended up becoming like great friends with and having all these adventures with because my friend Justin heard their album being played inside the record store. How could that not be one of my top fucking albums? that the second album, you know?
I love it.
Oh, another one? Probably Idlewild Post Electric Blues. I don't know if you know that band or that record per se. And anybody that's a fan of that band probably wouldn't put that one as one of the band's top records per se. I just, dude, if you don't smile when you hear the song Readers and Writers, you're like dead inside, man. Like, that record just makes me fucking happy. It's just such a fucking, I go to that album 1,000 fucking times, man. Okay. So that's two, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned a few others earlier, like Peg Boy and.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're talking about like albums I could listen to like nonstop and just, I'm just enjoying them. Like if I am on a fucking desert island forever, mm-hmm. and that's what I got.
Right.
You know, probably SNFU and No One Else Wanted to Play, because what a fucking wonderful album that is. Just so fucking much fun. Fuck. What would the last two be? You're gonna kill me because it's a total cheat, but Story of the Clash. I don't care if it's fucking all the hits. I'm taking that one.
That's totally fine. Yeah.
I don't know if that's cheating or not. But
nah, there's no rules, dude.
Fuck, what would number five be? I don't know.
I mean, mind you, this is going to haunt you if you answer.
It's going to haunt me. I'm gonna like obsess about it and think about, I'm like, fuck, how did I not think of that album?
Yeah.
But if I like, I'm thinking like, if I'm just looking around at like my records and stuff right now. Fuck. It'd have to be something by New Model Army. Well, or something by.
What about Swerve Driver?
Fuck, man, Swerve Driver Raise. Yes, you're right. That's number five.
That's what Swerve Driver, I was.
Waiting for you. Swerve Driver Raise. I was gonna put a Sam I Am record or a Seaweed record in there, but dude, this is fucking difficult.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
I'm sticking with that.
What?
Fucking Music Park's Out of the Angeles. Fucking Idlewild Post Electric Blues. SNFU and No One Else Wanted to Play. Story of the Clash. And fucking Swerve Driver Raise. Yep.
I dig it. Yeah.
That's it.
Solid list. I'm in. And it's your list, man. I mean, you can make it whatever you want. I mean, and
I might just listen to all those records tonight, just back to back, just for some fun.
Nice. Five years from now, I'll email you and say, this was your list. Is this still the list?
Well, the interesting thing is if you ask about songs, like what are like, that's a completely different thing.
Sure.
Totally. But yeah, I'll stick with those albums.
Well, right. Cause you're so right. Like there might be an album that a band has that might have your favorite songs on it. Like maybe one or two songs, but maybe the rest of the songs are not that great. So there might be a different album that you think is better because you like more of the songs on it or something like that. You know, it's hard to choose the albums from the songs. Yeah.
That's a slippery slope. It's tricky.
Yeah. Yeah, but I, like the greatest hits thing, I think, is a perfectly reasonable way to go. You know?
I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, the Story of the Clash is a great record.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, all the eras. It's got all the fucking jams.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the Clash are a great band, but it's like, you know, they have plenty of songs that are not great. You know, I mean, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. So if you can trim the fat a little bit.
They had a lot of output. There was going to be a lot of, you know, ones that don't make the cut.
right. Well, shit, Jeff, it's been awesome talking to you and great to catch up. I'm super excited about how things are coming along with all of the records that you've been involved with over the past year. And, you know, before too long, we're going to see some new albums from Heavy Seas, Her Head's on Fire, and Airstream Futures. So super excited. And, you know, I'm glad that you're getting your second vaccine dose here really soon.
Yeah. Cannot wait.
Yeah. And you know, when shows do come back, you know, I'm eager to see you perform live in any one of those, you know, bands. So hopefully we'll play some shows together. That'd be great.
I would love that too. That'd be great. I mean, hopefully it's sooner than later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would love that. And you know, I'll hopefully be talking to you real soon, man. Take care.
Sounds good, dude.